And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky back with you. Buck, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm good. DJ, coming off that fantastic Monday Night Football game. It's been a good weekend. It's been a good football weekend. We had a chance to dig into some of the tape and come up with some ideas that we can talk about today on the pod.
Yeah, I'm excited. We're going to have a fun episode today. We're going to hit on this game, what our reactions were, some takeaways from Bills-Titans. Going to talk about what I think we could be heading towards, a fascinating QB offseason. I know we're right in the middle of this season, but as we kind of look back at what's happened this year and look ahead to what's coming next year, we're going to discuss the teams that might be in QB limbo, which I think is going to be a fascinating discussion there. I've watched some of the top college kids over the last week, so I want to touch on some of those guys as well. But let's jump in, Buck. I hit it up with you with the same question. I feel like when we have these big games, just open-ended, your thoughts last night.
Thoughts last night, like it's the Buffalo Bills are everything that you want in a title contender. They have a franchise quarterback. They have a system around the quarterback with a supporting cast that allows them to flourish and thrive. They have a defense that has the potential to be a lockdown defense. And when they're rolling, they look like the best team in football. The problem that I still have, or maybe the concern that I still have about the Bills, is I do wonder if they have a collection of explosive athletes that will enable them to play against the heavyweight teams in the final four. If they're playing those teams in the final four that are locked and loaded like the Chiefs, locked and loaded like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers or the Dallas Cowboys, do they have the firepower to go toe-to-toe with those teams? Not schematically, but from an athletic, explosive player standpoint, can they match up with those guys? Because in these big games, DJ, we can talk about calling games and X-ing and O-ing and those things, but it typically comes down to I have a guy or a handful of guys that are better than your guys, and those guys make plays. And so my only concern about the Bills is, do they have enough of those guys to be able to go toe-to-toe with the teams that they'll have to face in the Final Four?
So I have a similar takeaway here, and that was this one. We'll see if Cleveland can get into the tournament. Now, they are so beat up, and Baker just came out and said he's got a fully torn labrum, so we'll see how he grinds through that. But I think if Cleveland can get their offensive linemen back, get their backs back, get Jarvis Landry back, a lot of key players they're missing on defense. They're going to be without JOK on defense for a while. But let's just assume that they weather this storm with all these injuries and the Cleveland Browns make it into the tournament. There are three teams in the AFC where I might not say, I don't know necessarily that they'll win a Super Bowl, but with Baltimore, Tennessee, and Cleveland, those will test your physicality. And if you are not ready to bang, you're going to be out. And I'm talking about the premier, like we've got Kansas City, Buffalo, Chargers. I put even the way the Cincinnati offense can get rolling, Vegas can get rolling. Like those are some high flying teams that can really put up points in a big way. But man, at some point in time in the playoffs, those teams are going to run into a Baltimore, a Tennessee, or a Cleveland. And if you aren't ready for that physicality, you might have the best team, but that's a bad matchup and you might be done.
Yeah, bad matchup and you might be done. And what I like about all of those teams, they know exactly who they are and they don't change. Like we on the outside can say, hey, you need to do this and do that. They're like, yeah, we do. But one thing that we're not going to cheat is we're not going to cheat on who we are from a brand perspective. We're going to line up. We're going to play physical football. We're going to hit you on both sides of the ball. And at the end of the day, you're going to be in a 12-round fight. And if you're the last man standing, good luck the next round. Because what they do is they beat you up so much that the next round, they take all the starch out of you. So they may stagger you, but another team will knock you out. The other team that I will put in that category, they haven't shown it all the way yet, but they're beginning to come. The Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah.
When they're healthy on offense and Quentin Nelson and that offensive line is there, and they have their full complement of running backs with Jonathan Taylor and Marlon Mack and Nyheim Hines, they can play that style. And so you're right. You got to be built a certain way to deal with those physical teams. And the most important thing, that seeding is everything in the tournament now. because the number one seed gets that bye. But if you don't get that, can you imagine getting a thicket of, oh, the opening round we play Cleveland. Then the next round we play Baltimore. Then the next round we play Kansas City. DJ, those two early games against maybe physical teams can completely destroy your playoff run just from that standpoint. So
you can take those body blows. You might win a fight, but you take some of those body blows and those linger and carry on into the next game. But I mean, to me, it's just fascinating how you have different makeup of these teams. So to me, the challenge, and let's look at it both ways. The challenge for Baltimore is to do what they did the other day, and that's get their offense and their passing game that's continuing to grow. Not, it didn't put up big numbers. They did it against Indy. But showing that they can compete in that type of a game, right? Showing they can win and come back from a large deficit. That's something they haven't done a lot of. So Tennessee, look, their secondary is beat up. They've got to get they've got to get healthier, and they've got to get better on the back end and get healthy. But that's their, I don't worry about them offensively. They are going to pound the rock. I think Tannehill, you saw it off play action. He marries up perfectly with the way they want to play. I thought Todd Downing called a good game in that one. Cleveland, defensively, the communication has been awful. We talked about that on the show yesterday. Like, that's what they need to clean up so they can get that rolling. I think once they get their assortment of weapons back, you know, their offense, I'm not worried about them. So you flip over to the other teams we're talking about. KC, obviously defense, right? You got to figure out what's going on with their defense. Buffalo, I would say, has the least warts of any of these teams. I feel like they are probably the most well-rounded team. You know, I lost that game. That was a good football game in a tough environment. You know, Cincinnati's kind of the new kid on the block, I think, still trying to find themselves completely, but here they are, they're 4-2. And, you know, I think you can make cases that they can just continue to get better along the line of scrimmage up front, along that offensive line, playing a little bit better. Chargers is run defense. Like, that's where they've got to figure out their run fits, and they're last in the league. So they've got to improve that. The Colts, maybe, you know, health you're talking about with them. So it's just kind of, it's interesting that we have these kind of two different camps, two different styles. These guys are all going to get in the tournament. They're all going to clash. But who can improve their weaknesses or their liabilities from here we are week six to the end of the year, I think is going to tell you who the class of the AFC is.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is personnel driven. Do you have the personnel to be able to fix the issues without having to go outside of your building? Because there are no major trades to be made. You can't necessarily find a marquee free agent on the street that you can come in and upgrade it. So who do we have in the building that we can either elevate to a more prominent role, or we can trick up the scheme to be able to put us in a position to play better? The team that I'm going to be interested in terms of being able to make that improvement, the Chargers.
Yeah.
Because offensively, they have the personnel to be able to do it. They have the personnel to be able to put points on the board. I would like to think that if they need to be able to run it, they can run it more to play what we call playoff football in December. Mm-hmm. That if they need to give it to Austin Eckler and others, that they have the ability to do it. The key will be, how can Brandon Staley fix the run defense when the run defense really needs to be fixed? Mm-hmm. You and I can talk about some of this. Their run issues are, it's a slower death if you let people run. Like, typically teams that are running, it's hard for them to generate points, because when you get into the red zone, it bogs down. But now when you play a Tennessee, you play a Baltimore, you play a Cleveland, and you really have to stop the run in the playoffs, do they have the capacity and the wherewithal to be able to do that? That is really the trick.
Yeah, and to me, it's fascinating because, you know, so my discussions there in the building, because you talk about, okay, well, is it, you know, is it still trying to match the personnel with this new scheme? You have a new coaching staff in, you play with lighter boxes, which is kind of under that Vic Fangio tree. And that's the style, right? You're going to play with lighter boxes, limit the explosive plays. If you're playing with lighter boxes, do you need bigger guys? You need a more stout defensive lineman up front. Like, is that a personnel thing? And the answer that I've kind of got inside the building is like, no, it's actually, we believe it's team defense, run defense is all 11 guys and getting in the proper fits. And if we're all fitting properly, and that's coming from the second and third level and being where we need to be, that collectively you play the run that way. And I think, look, does that lead to, you know, negative plays? Does that lead to 1 and 2 yard runs? No, but if you play it properly, some of these 8, 10, 12, 15 yard runs turn into, you know, 4, 5, 6 yard runs, and they'll live with that all day long.
Yeah, no, and I think they are willing to live with those things. Like, they're willing to live with that because you're dictating the terms. If I'm saying we're going to be more coverage-based, we're going to take away the explosive plays in the passing game, we're going to limit the amount of times that you're able to throw it over the top, and we're saying we're willing to give you 4 and 5 yards because we don't believe you're disciplined enough to stay with that game plan, that's one thing. But it's another team when you're facing Tennessee, Cleveland, and Baltimore, and they want to play that way. Mm-hmm. Now you have to figure out a way, how can we get them out of that and make those teams throw it? And are we good enough to cover it when we know that, hey, we're going to put an extra defender in the box and make them throw it over the top of the defense?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be one of the challenges they have, trying to sort through that and figure that out. Other takeaways from that game last night specifically, Buck? I mean, look, Josh Allen, I thought he does some incredible Josh Allen things. There was probably 2 or 3 throws, and you'll see him point to himself. He wish he could have those back. But I sit there, and it is an offense that just puts you on your heels at all times. I mean, I don't know how else to describe it. It just feels like they are in attack mode at all times, and he is big play hunting. And then he's doing a nice job of getting his eyes back down and finding quick outlets. And those quick outlets, they're 10-yard gains. Like, they expand the field so much vertically that when he has to work top to bottom and comes back down to the bottom, like, those aren't 4 and 5 yard checkdowns. They're 10 and 12 yard checkdowns.
Yeah, it's 10 and 12 yard checkdowns. It's funny because offensively, they've assembled the kind of offense that I believe they hate facing. Yeah. Right, so they have some dynamic weapons on offense. Stephon Diggs, Cole Beasley is a terrific slot receiver.
Gabriel Davis. Yeah,
Gabriel Davis has given them a spark. But the trick to it all, and what really dictates your coverage, is Josh Allen. Because if you play man to man against Josh Allen, he scoots and goes out, and it's a 20-yard gain on a scramble. If you play zone, those guys are so electric with the ball in their hands, they're turning 5-yard plays into 15-yard things. So you're always in a conundrum in terms of how do we call the game to slow down their biggest weapons. And so you talk about them being in attack mode. Brian Daboll and those guys understand the jam that they have you in, and they are unrelenting in letting you figure it out. Like, they are going at you. And so offensively, they are exactly – what you want. I do worry about so much of it being Josh Allen dependent. I would like to continue to see them to expand the running game, so sometimes he can get a down off. It's not always on him. It's kind of like we talk about with Baltimore. Sometimes you just want, hey, I don't want it to always be a read. I just want to hand it off and Lamar Jackson
let him do it.
Have a playoff and do those things. So the same thing with Josh Allen, but offensively you're there. And look, the overwhelming majority of the time, the Buffalo Bills defense can hang and do whatever it is they want to do against others. I just worry about in these matchups when you talk about premier athletes and Tyreek Hill and some of these explosive weapons on the outside, do they have enough erasers to limit some of the explosive plays that those guys can produce?
Think about how dominant the Arizona Cardinals have been this year, right? They're the only remaining undefeated team. They're 6-0. They have the second highest point differential at 85, so plus 85. So they're 6-0 with a plus 85 point differential. The Buffalo Bills are 4-2 with a plus 105 point differential. So they've got 2 losses. You don't want to have 2 losses, but it took 34 points to beat them in that one last night. They are, to me, and I give Arizona credit. Apparently, I've picked against Arizona every week. Their fans have let me know this. I was not even aware of this. I do these picks every Monday off of a text message. I'm not going to say it's a tremendous amount of thought that goes into those picks before the first injury report comes out. But apparently, I've picked against Arizona every single week, and they're 6-0. So they should ask me to keep picking against them, for one thing. But all the respect to them, they're playing great. They're undefeated. I still think, even after the loss last night, I think Buffalo is the best team in the NFL, personally.
Really? Even over Tampa?
I would take them over Tampa, yeah.
I believe
in what they're doing. I think they are so dynamic and so explosive. And I think Josh, in those big games, his ability to use his legs is an X factor.
Yeah, I think my top three, Bucks, Cardinals, Bills, prior to last night. I will say this about the Cardinals. The Cardinals have built a defense that is designed to stop those offenses that we're worried about.
Lots of
when
speed.
When you look at the speed and the versatility of the players that they have, Buda Baker can play a variety of different roles. Both of their linebackers, Isaiah Simmons and Xavier Collins, can play roles. And then you think about up front, J.J. Watt, Chandler Jones, being able to control stuff at the line of scrimmage. Man, they're talented, and they have them going. And Vance Joseph does not care. He is throwing all kinds of caution into the wind as he attacks these offenses. And they're generating turnovers. And that is the X factor, because the one thing that you can't control in the postseason is how the ball bounces when it comes to turnovers. But they're feasting off errant throws and miscues and blown assignments, and they're turning those plays into turnovers. And then on offense, they're cashing in those lottery tickets.
Mm-hmm. No, look, I can't give you a tremendous argument when you talk about those top three teams you just mentioned of this team versus that team. I think they're all fantastic. I just think I put myself in a postseason setting, and I get out there and I see Josh Allen throwing it all over the place and then running you over and running away from you and all the things he can do. And then I think Sean McDermott, that was a buzzsaw with Derrick Henry they ran into last night. I mean, they've controlled him, I think, in the previous three or four meetings, and he was due to pop one. He did. But no, I think all three of those teams, you can make a case, just really complete football teams.
No, I mean, I can't dispute it. I mean, all of those teams have the necessary ingredients to be able to get it done. I think the key will be, over a marathon of a season, how do you continue to get better when you're those top three teams? Yeah. What areas do you focus on? How do you continue to develop the team to get better? Because we all can look at our team and identify what the flaws are. And what we're hoping is, like, well, maybe we're the only ones that can see it. Maybe the other teams can't see it. Like, maybe we mask it so well, it doesn't become a thing. But how do you manage each quarter of the season? Because now we're coming up on the halfway mark, and now you know exactly who you are. So how do you play the last half of the season compared to how you played the first half?
No doubt. All right. I want to get to another NFL discussion, and we're going to do that right after this. All right, Buck, we're going to get to some college stuff here in a minute, but there's one other quarterback thing I wanted to talk about, one other NFL topic. So I went down, looked at all the teams, and I thought, okay, let's do the list of the teams that could potentially have a different quarterback next year. In other words, it is not a lock who their starting quarterback in 2022 is going to be. And we've talked about the fact this is not shaping up to be a great quarterback draft class.
No.
We're going to have a couple veterans that could be moved. I think Deshaun Watson kind of highlights that one, that list, whenever that were to happen. But let me just give you the list of teams. I will say right now, they can't feel 100% certain that they have their quarterback for next year. You ready?
Yep.
Miami Dolphins. I don't think it's a lock. They've flirted way too much with Deshaun Watson to be completely committed there. Pittsburgh Steelers.
Ooh.
I think this is probably the last year for Ben. So they're going to be in the quarterback market. Houston Texans, you know, we'll see if they feel like that answer is in house. I have a feeling they're probably going to be after one. I don't think we can say with certainty the Denver Broncos have their quarterback for 2022 on their roster. The New York Giants could be a new head coach, new GM. That often coincides with a new quarterback. I don't think that's a lock. Although Daniel Jones, talent wise, he's got a lot of ability, hasn't put it together yet, but not a lock. Philadelphia, I don't think it's a lock. They've got three first-round picks. They could go shopping. Washington does not have a lock. I don't think Heineke's a lock coming back there. Fitz, you don't know what's going to happen with his health. Detroit, we can get into that a little bit more. I don't think Jared Goff, that they view him as their long-term guy. The Atlanta Falcons, I know that Matt Ryan's playing well, but you could at any year they're going to try and find that next guy. So I think they roll with Matt Ryan for another year based off the way he's playing, but I can't say with 100% certainty that they don't go into the quarterback market. The New Orleans Saints, I don't think it's a lock. I mean, Jameis has done some good things, but I don't think that's a lock that we know who their quarterback is next year. And then there's the two wild cards with Green Bay and Seattle. You know, is Aaron Rodgers going to get out of there? And is Russell Wilson going to try and get his way out of Seattle? So just with those uncertainty, that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. That's 12 teams that we don't know for certain who their quarterback is next year. And at least from the early look of things, it does not look like an ultra promising quarterback draft class. So what does that tell you?
It tells me a lot of movement. It also tells me that the Houston Texans should be ready because the phone is going to light up a telethon. Yeah. I mean, people are going to be calling. And so
doesn't that make sense to wait then with them? Like, we've talked about this before. Like, you say, I'll get the distraction off the team. They're not winning any games this year. So let it ride out and then get to the offseason. And then that is like you just auction this up to 12, potentially 12 suitors.
I mean, it makes sense now. You've already gone through the tough part. Have you done a PR campaign? Like, you just have another few weeks to go. And then once the deadline is passed, like, there's nothing else to really talk about when it comes to number four. So, yeah, it would be smart to do that. I wonder, who are the other veterans that could be in the mix? You know, Mitch Trubisky, who's been a two-time Pro Bowler, I think.
Yeah.
As a starter. Man, did you just get a cast of journeyman? You don't really have anybody.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there's nothing that gets you super fired up. You know, is that Dwayne Haskins? Does he get the Steelers opportunity? You know, he's another one.
You know, I wonder, he's been in the building, so you wonder if he does get the opportunity.
I mean, I think some of these guys will get released. Like, if Tua's not starting for Miami, somebody's going to give him a chance. He's going to be starting somewhere else. You know, maybe that's the trade. Maybe he's part of that trade if it's a Watson thing that goes down. But Tua will be starting for somebody next year. You know, if Matt Ryan, I think Matt Ryan more than likely is another year there in Atlanta. So you probably trim this down. You probably say 8 to 10 of these at the end of the day will end up switching.
Yeah. And so you have to be really on it, and you have to be on it early. You got to be first to the party to get the guy that you want. When I think about the situation around the league and just how everyone is adjusting and adapting, you got to be able to swing. You got to swing for the fences when it comes to the quarterback spot, and you got to make sure that you at least have one, have someone that you can win with. The problem is those teams that don't have one that they can at least win with, now you're either going into free agency and shopping, which is cost prohibitive, or you go into the draft and you're hoping you roll the dice on the right kid that figures it out.
Yeah. It also makes you wonder too, like if you see all these teams are going to be looking for somebody, if you have a quarterback who's playing well, but maybe, you know, a little bit older on the other side of 30, do you think, you know what, this is a good time to, you know, we're going to start our rebuilding process, and this is a pretty good lottery ticket that we could cash in for some picks, you know?
Yeah, it is pretty
good. It's going to be a place where you see that.
I mean, look, the lottery ticket is going to be there, and you can get more picks, and you can help the team long term. But man, you just talk about the value. If you don't have a franchise quarterback, you got to find one. You got to go all in to make it happen.
But I mean, that's why Seattle, to me, if Seattle and Russell miss a bunch of time, they don't make the playoffs, they have a bad year, you, as hard as it would be to trade somebody of his caliber, and you're not going to be able to replace him in the short term, but you could, I mean, you would get a boatload of picks, combination of picks and players to kind of reset your organization. But man, it would be hard to make that move to trade a guy like that out of the building after all he's done, and he's still playing really well. But I mean, if you're looking for rate of return, I don't know that there'll be a better offseason than this one to get a massive, massive rate of return on a trade.
Yeah. And so then you got to be able to look at the board that you have in front of you, whatever year that won the train, and just trying to figure out, are there enough good guys for me to take advantage of this pick and make it really hamstring the previous franchise for some time. So I think you have to have a good feel for what is available in the college world before you begin to have these discussions, because you want to know how much value could I be getting in the immediate future if I take this and move forward.
Yeah. So it'll be a fascinating discussion to see what happens on the quarterback carousel. I mean, we're 6 weeks into the season. Some of this stuff will crystallize as we go through the rest of the year. All right. I want to get to a college topic here, Buck, in just a minute. We'll do it right after this. All right, Buck, on the plane home the other day, coming back from where the heck were we? Baltimore. I popped on Georgia defense, and they have so many different dudes, man. So I just focused on fives. I couldn't get to all of them to watch them all right now, but I focused on five guys. And the 99, Jordan Davis, the big nose, he is a more agile version of Linval Joseph. Like, I see Linval doing those charging games. Linval's a phenomenal multi-year Pro Bowler player. He's a stud. This dude is 6'6", 340 pounds, and he can move. I tweeted out that I was watching their defense, and our buddy David Pollock texted me. He was like, you know, he's hit 20 on the GPS. Ooh. I was like, what? Wow. Yeah, 20 miles per hour. So but it, his evaluation was interesting to me because his, what kind of going back to what we were saying earlier, I gave him a grade, which is a big grade, which puts him kind of in that top 15 type area. And it got me thinking, okay, he's more of a pocket pusher than a pure interior pass rusher. He's plenty quick, but his thing is you can't move him off the line of scrimmage. He's got excellent block awareness. He's just stout and strong. He's a tackle collector inside. He's got range. But it got me thinking more and more of these teams adopting these lighter box defenses. I almost think like a guy like this carries more value than he would maybe in the last few years. In the last few years, it was like, man, if you can't really, really rush the passer as an interior defensive lineman, you're going to drop in the draft. But
yeah,
I think there's something to be said, especially as a pocket pusher. Like to me, pushing the pocket is pass rushing. You are affecting the quarterback by doing that.
Yeah, you are affecting the quarterback. And a pocket pusher needs to be a consistent pocket pusher presence, meaning that he is consistently walking the center and the guard back into the quarterback's lap. He is forcing the quarterback to throw the ball higher. So it's elevated throws, which tend on the back end to lead to overthrows off tips and overthrows. And so you just want to make sure that you have a partnership that is really a pass rushing partnership, that they're able to make it happen, make it go, whatever. But yeah, it's impressive right now.
Yeah, so that was a big one. The linebacker I loved, N'Kobe Dean, number 17. Now he's a little under 6 feet. He's like right at 230 pounds. And I guess in talking to scouts, that talked to coaches there, said he's kind of maxed out in terms of like how big he's going to be. I don't care. I see these 230 pound linebackers flying around making plays every week. He is outstanding, big time explosiveness. His instincts are off the charts. He's a phenomenal blitzer. He can cover. He had a ridiculous diving interception in the Auburn game when I was watching that one. So he can mirror backs out of the backfield, no issues. And then from the background stuff that I got, they said he's, you know, leader of the team. He's like a 3.5 GPA, like high character. He's kind of the straw that stirs the drink. And I'm all in on the leaders of the best defenses in college football. Like, you know, I'll catch that ship. I feel good about that one.
I mean, you should feel good about that. Here's what I'll say about Georgia guys, and I don't know if they'll get the same bump that Alabama guys get for playing under Nick Saban and knowing how the pro game is. Should get the same bump.
Yeah.
Because when you think about what they've been able to do and how they play down there, man, they're producing pros. And you look, I mean, just looking at their roster, you salivate over all the talent that they have on both sides of the ball. And they have a ton of freshmen. They haven't even touched the field yet.
No, it's stupid. I mean, I'm watching these five guys. So then 44, the defensive end is 6'5", 275 pound Trevon Walker. He's got a long arm. He looks incredibly long. He's got a nice long arm move. He plays with urgency, suddenness. They move him around some on their front. They'll drop him into coverage. A phenomenal athlete. I mean, he's a first round pick all day long. The safety, they've got 17. I'll probably pronounce his name wrong. 16, Lewis. Sign, I guess, C-I-N-E. I gave him a 63 grade, which is, you know, you're talking about a late one, early two starting safety, walk in the door, and, you know, he's outstanding, can fill. They've got another edge guy, a linebacker, Adam Anderson, who I gave him like a 61/63 range. So he's kind of in that, you know, second, third round type. I mean, and then 95, I haven't even done him yet. He flashes all over the place. You got another linebacker, 7, that flashes all over the place. And the best player on the whole defense is the true sophomore D tackle, 88. Nobody blocked him. And the three, I watched Kentucky, Arkansas, Auburn, and I have yet to see anybody block that dude. But I'm trying to figure out, I haven't watched Georgia's offense yet, but if their offense has any pulse, nobody beating them this year.
I mean, you just said and gave me the recipe and the formula for why Georgia wins, and it goes all the way back to the Herschel Walker era. I mean, they run because of their defense, the running game, and the quarterback that makes some timely plays. When they line up and they want to run off tackle, they're going to do some things and try and figure it out. But, when you look at this Georgia team play, I don't know who can go toe-to-toe with them and deal with them from a mentality standpoint.
Yeah.
Because they believe that when they take you to the quote-unquote woodshed, they're
– Remember when we would watch LSU's offense the year that they won with Burrow. And it was like, you know, I mean, Terrace Marshall, I think, was the fourth receiver. I mean, it was Jamar Chase. It was Justin Jefferson. It was Terrace Marshall. was another receiver in there. I'm forgetting. Then you had Edwards-Helaire in the backfield. Then you had Joe. I mean, it was just like, it was an embarrassment. Like, they were just right. so much better than everybody they were playing against. And I'm watching this Georgia defense saying, this Georgia defense is the LSU offense. Like, he just, every dude is just, and it's ridiculous, man, how good they are up front.
And but DJ, going all the way back to our times when we were scouting, remember how we used to talk about that place, Georgia?
Oh, yeah.
And how we would go in there and say, man.
We couldn't understand why they weren't winning.
I don't know why they can't win.
Yeah.
They now have found a way to do both.
Yeah. They've figured it out.
Yeah, they have definitely figured it out.
I mean, think about it. Like, I don't think they won the conference with Matthew Stafford at quarterback, A.J. Green at receiver, no Sean Marino at running back. Didn't win anything. That's crazy.
Well, it's crazy. It's also the depth and the talent in the SEC that they just couldn't run the table and just roll through. But no, they haven't been able to.
Yeah.
All the trophies they still got.
Well, I think they're fixing to put a little something in the trophy case this year based off of the three games that I just studied. Good night. Oh, yeah, ridiculous. All right, Buck, anything else you want to get to here today?
No, man, it's always fun, man. It's always fun we can have these discussions, not only about, like, just state of the game in terms of the quarterbacks and what the quarterback situation could look like in the offseason, but when we begin to talk about these players that will be in the 2022 draft and the football factories, as we would call them on the road. There are a handful of schools that we're like, these are the factories. If I need to find an NFL player, I need to make sure I do a stop. Georgia being one of those destinations, you certainly have to pay attention to the Bulldogs, particularly after they've become number one, and just look at all of the talent that they have on the defense side of the ball. It is very impressive.
Yeah, very early. I'm just starting to get cranking on this, but I will say the early way back look at this thing, Buck, as I'm digging into this, defensive lineman. If you're a team, and think about those teams are going to be picking in the top 10, mm-hmm. we can kind of know who the bad teams are. They all need pass rushers. And there's one at Michigan. There's one that's pretty good at Purdue. I just mentioned these guys at Georgia. Obviously, we know about Thibodeau at Oregon. There are defensive linemen in this draft, which is good news for bad teams. So that's going to be a fun one. I don't know if we have the quarterbacks. We'll see. But I remember back in time, but before the 2017 draft, I said it. I wish I could pull the words back in. I said everybody should wait on quarterbacks because next year we're going to have Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen and all those guys. Just wait. And then here we go. 2017 gave us Patrick Mahomes. Lamar Jackson. Was Lamar in that? Was he 2017 or 2018?
He's 2018.
Yeah.
But it was Mayfield, Sam Darnold.
Who else was 2017? Now I got to go look it up.
2017 is Trubisky, Pat Mahomes, Deshaun Watson.
Yeah. So it gave us Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. Ho-hum. You know, not too shabby. So maybe there's somebody that we just aren't given enough credit to, and we'll find them as we go through the draft process. Maybe this ends up being a decent quarterback draft after all. But that's going to do it for us. Appreciate you guys hanging with us. We'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.